Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Georgie, I'm going to ask you a hard question now. What is the little thing in life that gives you the most joy?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. Tough one. I'd probably say buying bags and shoes and diamonds, but I'm not sure that's the right answer, is it? I think the right answer is probably my husband and my children. My husband and my children.
Good answer.
What about you?
I think it's cooking a meal for friends.
Oh.
I know. It's actually Kate Spade, New York, who made me think of it. They're the brand that we love here at Sheer Luxe, and they're on a mission to spark little moments of joy in everyone's lives. From giving a gift to just telling someone how much you love them, they want to create a happiness chain reaction.
Love that. Go, Kate Spade. So what was the most recent thing you've done to give joy to someone else?
I like to keep the fashion desk well stocked with snacks. I'm a chocolate enabler at the fashion desk. What about you?
Oh, I mean, you are putting me on the spot. Do you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say the Sheer Luxe duvet day. We shut the company and gave everyone a day off. No broadcasting, no nothing, no social, no nothing.
That sparked a lot of joy for me as well, you
I
know?
Felt like it did. Good. I'm glad you said that. It felt pretty good. I mean, I got a duvet day myself, but I definitely felt like I got to spread a little joy amongst other people too. And actually, all joking aside, to be honest, Kate Spade's new collection itself really does spark joy for me. And I would like to find someone who can't look at the collection and find some happiness. From gorgeous gingham to pretty florals to raffia accessories. It's really full of happy, summery pieces for the season ahead. And if there's ever a time that we need happiness and joy in our lives, it's right now.
So true. Actually, just looking at their new ones online makes me happy. To find out more, head to katespade.co.uk to discover their new summer collection full of pieces that we promise will make you smile and bring you joy. And keep listening for more inspo for creating those small moments of happiness in your life.
Hello, I'm Georgie Courage-Cole and welcome to this Sheer Luxe in Conversation podcast. This week, I'm joined by my co-host, Charlotte Collins, and journalist, writer and broadcaster, Pandora Sykes. You'll undoubtedly know Pandora, if not from her time as fashion features editor at the Sunday Times Style, then for her immensely popular podcast, The Hilo. She's also the author of a collection of essays, How Do We Know We're Doing It Right?, and the host of The Missing podcast too. We're thrilled she's joined us today for the second in our podcast series in partnership with Kate Spade, all about sparking joy. Pandora, Charlotte, welcome. How lovely to have you with us, Pandora. We have been looking forward to this very much indeed. How are you on this sunny summer's day?
I'm feeling really joyful today because I think you can't not when it's this sunny.
It's so good, isn't it?
And it's made, I read something today from someone saying that the pandemic had fooled us into thinking that London was a bit rubbish. Mm. But now the sun's back, we've remembered why we love it.
So true. Let's start with London. We're all in London.
We are.
We're
yes,
in, yes in we London. Are. But I'm not planning to move out of London. No. I'm one of few that really plans to stay here forever. Charlotte, I know, is...
I like get heart palpitations if I leave the M25.
She can do the Cotswolds, but I mean, only to Soho House. That's kind of about it. And Pandora, you were nodding when I said staying in London. Is that your plan, to stay in London?
I think it's so impossible to predict how I might feel in 10 years.
Yeah.
But my plan is definitely to stay in London just because I think there isn't really much point moving out of London if you're both going to be commuting in for your job. I can do a lot from home, but I still think I would be coming to London a lot. I don't want to move somewhere to then be spending all my time commuting.
And also, if you like going out to eat and going to... my husband always kind of posits it, and I'm like, but where would we eat? Like, I don't understand where... You know there's no delivery there. Like, yes. It's not the same.
A friend came round to my house last night, whose son is starting school with my son, next time, and she said they were thinking about moving out of London. And she said... Where do you go for lunch?
Exactly.
quite.
Just a date agent letter. I'm like, where do you go for lunch? Well, I mean, you can go to the pub, but the food's not great. Yeah. She's like, right, well, that's it.
We're staying.
We can't go to the River Cafe for lunch. I don't want to come. So what are your favourite things to do here, Panora?
So I could probably take or leave going out for food too much because I am really happy just going to the pub. But what I love is knowing that everything's at my fingertips, like I can be anywhere. And actually, my friends live all over London. It's not even that I don't want to leave because, you know, everyone's within 10 minutes. I live in North London and or Northwest London, and my two best friends live in Dulwich. So I'm used to kind of going the whole of London, but that's what I love. There's always pockets you can discover. Favorite thing to do depends if I'm with the kids. If I'm with the children, then it will be outdoor based. It will be around a park.
Give me a good
Kew Gardens.
I need some fresh ones.
Oh, there are so many wonderful ones that I feel like I've been to in the last year. I love Regent's Park. So even when the zoo was shut, you could still see the animals from the park.
It's called the Free London Zoo Walk or something. I
mean, is it?
Yeah.
I didn't even know we were doing an official unofficial or an unofficial official.
That's her side hustle.
Yeah, it's my walk.
I wondered how you just bought all those new shoes.
It's the Hyde giraffe. Park as well. It's lovely. Clissold Park's lovely. Ooh,
never heard of that one.
Where's that? Clissold Park is Islington. Maybe it counts more as Arsenal. It's really lovely.
I've only been to Kew for the Christmas lights, and I always think I should go there more. From lockdown, we snuck. Really naughty. We snuck to Hampstead.
Yes, I remember. Remember, you drove past.
Oh, Hampstead Heath. Yeah. Oh, Hampstead.
We snuck up there. We weren't really allowed out of our borough, but we were quite near the end of being allowed out of our borough, so maybe. Maybe I won't get
it. Are you saying that Wandsworth is near Hampstead? Is that what you're claiming?
Well, it's in London. Anyway, we were desperate, Charlotte. You know, three children knocked out. We were desperate. And we'd done our own parts far too many times. So we snuck up to Hampstead. And it was so nice. Yeah, we're so lucky in London. So many green spaces, aren't we?
So many green spaces. If I had a whole day to myself, it would be going to lots of little independent bookshops. I'm a basic bitch.
Without the children.
Although quite nice. If I'm with them, then they can choose a book. But yes, they're 1 and 3, so not quite at the browsing stage yet. But yeah, I love Soho. I went out for dinner there a couple of weeks ago, and it felt like it was when you were still, you know, everyone was outside. It felt like we were abroad.
Oh my God,
it's the best feeling ever.
It's like being on the continent, and I really hope it stays.
You know, I walked down Portobello on Sunday, again, when the weather had just got gorgeous. And like with all the market smells and everything, and like life there again,
oh my
everything
God,
opened up.
Market.
Oh my God, it literally felt, it was so heaven. It felt so European. And then I get a bit sad though, because I think of all the things that I like about London in the sunshine, things that I'm just comparing to holiday. Do you know what I mean? Like, I might just think, oh, that reminds me of this. That reminds me of this. But like, I'd want to try and enjoy London for what London is in the sunshine.
Well, I think you can enjoy it.
You can have a holiday in your own town. London can have holiday feelings.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But I think I'm enjoying it because I'm like, oh, I feel like
well,
I'm
you
on
just holidayed. So you, Charlotte, had a week off last week, and you just holidayed in the UK, which I know is new for you, Charlotte. But you had a really nice,
we had a lovely time. The weather does help, but just actually having a week not on your emails makes a massive difference. I don't really think it matters where you go, actually. That's what I learned, that it's not about being abroad. It's about just having
oh, yeah,
a full-time
I love
off.
A UK holiday.
Yeah. I also love a holiday at home, or I did before lockdown. Like, that's why I've always loved the Christmas break, because you're actually at home.
Me too.
And you're not running around. You know, normally you have a break and you pack and you go somewhere and it's just stressful and we shout a lot, basically. And I don't know, to be at home and get up. But we got home on, when was it? Monday. And so I was like, can we just do nothing today? And we had breakfast and my little girl and I got back into my bed. And my husband's a real like, make the bed in the morning, don't get back into bed. He doesn't like the children and the bed in the day, like real. And I was like, I'm sorry, but it's Bank Holiday Monday and Mimi and I are getting back into bed. I'm going to put Mimi on. And it was just such a, like little things like that really make you
totally
happy.
Totally agree. Okay.
What other things make you happy about London?
So, yes, lots of bookshops. Portobello, which you just mentioned. I'm a big fan of vintage shopping, and Portobello Market is one of the best places. And I've definitely found some of my favourite vintage things from there. I found a camel wool Gucci blazer about 5 years ago for 60 quid, which is just like the most perfect
fit. You see people like you. I interviewed Laura Bailey the other day and she said the same. I was like, I didn't find those sorts of things.
I think it's like a mindset. if you really are committed to trying to find the vintage version of stuff, then there is, you know, there's some deprivation there. Yes. Because I'll see something I love and I only allow myself to buy it if I can't find the vintage version. Mm. So, you know, you have to sit on your hands a bit. Mm. Although I do a lot of really good vintage shopping online. Which,
that's what she said too. Yeah. I think I've maybe tried once. Didn't find the vintage Gucci blazer.
Good things come to those
who wait. Patient people like you, Padua, which I've got a feeling you are and I'm not.
I'm patient with some things. I mean, my husband would laugh hearing you say that. I'm very impatient about other things. But yes, with vintage shopping, I can definitely play the long game.
It's probably quite addictive, isn't it? If you know that you can, that the hunt is there and you can find that vintage alternative.
I'm out all day and this evening without going home. And I was so worried that I would really sweat today that I've got a dress in my bag in case, and deodorant in case I need to change. So at the end of this podcast, I will show you one of my recent vintage finds.
Oh, please.
Which I've been looking for in my head for 10 years.
For the benefit of the listeners, what is it?
It's a yellow summer dress. I feel like it's got quite early noughties Kate Moss vibes, which will forever be my summer pinup.
Is it a slip? No,
it's not a slip. I mean, it's just there, but I don't know if I'm allowed to leave the microphone.
Killing me. Go on, leave the microphone. Go on. She's going to go and get it. We're going to let her leave her chair.
Pretty.
Oh, it's really pretty. So what joyful things do you have planned today?
I'm actually going to have my hair done after I do this, which is really nice. I don't think I've had a day off this year, pretty much. So I've got the rest of today off.
To yourself?
Because I just filed a script. I've got that interim period before I have any notes on it.
So a script for what?
So it's a documentary for Radio 4.
Oh, can you tell us anything about it?
I actually don't know if I can, which sounds so...
I quite understand. I thought I'd try my luck. You never know.
I'll tell you after.
Could you tell us where you get your hair done instead?
I get my hair done at Hirschesons.
Do you?
Which is the best.
Anyway, yeah, that's pretty good to me.
I was going to say, I didn't need
Do you think?
Yes.
You have me coloured. Yeah, but not bad roots.
I think
nice
I might
roots.
Try that thing where you get nice you do it.
I no longer have to get it done regularly at all because I've stopped. Well, I don't go often enough. Maybe 3 times a year, every 4 months.
Also, I hate having my hair. I wish I looked good with dark hair. It's such a waste of
time.
I mean, hours and hours. But if you don't have to do it as frequently if you don't get your roots done.
Okay. Yeah, I've given up. I don't do it.
If you don't need it.
Well, I know I used to be blonder. I've now given up because I cannot bear.
You're pretty blonde.
I'm very blonde. I'm coming back albino next time. Like really white. So you got the day to yourself. How lovely. Can you tell us what other plans you have for the summer for travel? We know you're big into travel and you love your travel. Obviously, you won't have done much recently. What are you hoping to do this summer?
I feel like I've slowly been traveling less actually over the last 5 or 6 years. I definitely, in my mid-20s, go away loads. I think now, I suppose when everyone's looking at travel, having had a year of not having it and also knowing about big old carbon problem, my thing now is it would be lovely to be able to go abroad once a year, but I'm very happy doing lots in London. So this summer, playing it by ear in terms of whether or not we go abroad, but definitely planning some seaside trips.
So two questions. Number one, where abroad makes you the happiest? If you've got that one holiday, is it for you? Is it about going somewhere new? And it's going to be Charlotte. I know you're quite a creature of habit.
We've always tried to do both, like the habit places and the new places. But yes,
yeah,
I mean,
that's
now the habit
most,
for sure.
Isn't it? Yeah. I used to be very much like new places. Mm. And actually, as I get older, maybe this is just inevitable as you get older, and especially with the children, like since I had my daughter, we've gone back to the same place in Cornwall. And I now want to carry on doing that. Mm. And we always go and see my parents who have a cottage in North Norfolk. And I'd love her to do that every summer because I want her to start recognising places. And I don't really mind if those aren't abroad places because, as anyone with children knows, it is so much more expensive and so much more of a hassle to go abroad with kids. So I'm kind of thinking that whilst I would love them to be doing wonderful safaris and stuff every year, it's quite a lofty ambition.
They also so, do also, at that age, do they? Like, take them when they
So I think
remember.
It might be like me and my husband that do the abroady bit.
I think that's a great... I mean, the plane thing.
If you've got all the time and money in the world, then I get it.
And they could have a nanny each. I mean, practically even fly separately. I mean, that would be lovely. But that has not happened to us. I mean, we had a moment where we left my son's bunny rabbit at one end of Dubai Airport as we were boarding the plane at the other. I mean, if you've been to Dubai Airport, it's about 3 miles long. I mean, things like that.
No, but also leaving Bunny anywhere.
Bunny did come back, though. Bunny made it back.
Yeah, a week later.
But not on the... What did you do on the plane?
We didn't have Bunny. I was getting on the plane, calling my sister at the time, going, we've lost the Nemo rucksack with the iPad. And Bunny, please, can you get onto Lost Property right now? Anyway, he did make it home 5 days later. So, but, you know, things like that happen to us. Or you nearly miss flights. It's very stressful. I'm with you. I think North Norfolk is one of the loveliest places. Actually, for my family, it brings us the most joy. We quite often go near Brancaster or to Brancaster.
Yeah.
And it's the worst place to get to Norfolk because it's not very far. But when you come off the motorway, you're on an A road. That is just one road, one lane. And if there's a tractor in front of you or something. But he always says he comes off the motorway and his shoulders drop. And he just feels like instantly... less stressed about anything. It is a really happy place, isn't it?
It's a really happy place, and also it's where my grandfather lived, so I've been going since I was tiny, and my uncle has a house there. My brother and his wife have a cottage there, so it's very nostalgic for us. But then I also quite like that where we go in Cornwall, I've never been before. A couple of years ago, we don't have any family there, and I feel like we're making new family traditions, which I love the feeling of.
So we are the other way around. My family, my mum started going to Cornwall, went to Harlan Bay, you know where the pig is now, when she was 12.
Oh, there's a new pig in Cornwall.
There's a new pig my grandparents bought. I mean, it's a bungalow with just about running water. I'm not being deep, by the way, like it's quite basic. It's been in my family since my mum was 12. Mm. In the days when it wasn't very sophisticated around there. But that's where I grew up, where all my family, all my cousins. But my husband and I went separately to Brancaster because we were kind of like, we want to start our own family tradition. So
Is it Norfolk's closer anyway, right, than Cornwall?
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, but the traffic. I live in South London, getting across.
Yeah, it takes us, because we have to stop a few times with the two little ones. It takes us 8 hours to get to Cornwall.
When I was a child and we used to go to Cornwall... My mum said when she was younger, they used to break up the journey with stopping for two nights on the way. This is how far Cornwall was then. I mean, I guess
it is great to stop for the night.
And we used to stop for the night.
Then you lose a lot of the
time.
Yeah. I agree. I think it would be really lovely to stop for a night en route and definitely just do 4 hours each day with the children.
But you can
do it in four hours
straight from
Not get to Cornwall in four hours. It's 6 hours.
Yeah. Sorry. You absolutely can get to Cornwall. We're not going to fall out. You absolutely
can. From where I'm coming from to where I'm going, let's settle it with that.
Cornwall's a big place.
I'll send you a screenshot of ways.
I'm also not leaving London at 5 o'clock on Friday, bank holiday, by the way. Just putting that one out there.
No.
But yeah, we went to Salcombe a few weeks ago and that was a full 4 hours.
Yeah, it was lovely. No. So therefore...
But Reading can take 4 hours if there's a tree on the motorway and, you know... Anyway, we'll agree to it.
I've never been to Cornwall.
I'm quite an anxious traffic person. Mm. So basically by about 2 o'clock on a Sunday, if I'm out of London, I'm like, it's time to go.
It's horrible, that feeling on a Sunday, isn't it? I get the worst Sunday jitters and Sunday blues, actually, which is why bank holidays are so nice.
Do you still get Sunday blues as a freelancer?
I think it's like buried into my epidermis. And I will never, ever rid of it.
So do you have anything you can do to combat the Sunday blues?
So many things. So I try not to make plans on a Sunday after lunchtime so I can just kind of gently zen. I try not to put in anything big on a Monday, like any big meetings, any deadlines. It hasn't worked recently, but I've noticed it really affects, because I get insomnia, so it really affects whether or not I sleep. If I know that Monday is my reading, research, replying to emails, admin, invoicing day, then it means I don't dread it, because I'm quite geeky and love clearing my inbox and doing invoices and stuff.
Collecting money.
Collecting money. And I never seem to have time to do all of that. That's the problem being a freelancer, is I never factor in that time. Mm-hmm. So then that's when I end up doing it on weekends or in the evenings and stuff. So that is kind of my way of trying to minimize the fear.
Because it's so interesting, because I get Sunday scaries, but I have like the complete opposite.
You have to fill it with stuff.
Have to fill it, because I have to have something to look forward to on the Sunday evening, so it's still kind of part of the weekend. Otherwise, I get home at like 3 on a Sunday, and then I'm like, it's the week now.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Mine is that.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, mine is the opposite way, in that I don't want there to be any expectation of me.
Yeah.
So, because my anxiety tends to be kind of like social anxiety, so it would be like, am I on good form? So if I then don't plan anything where I have to interact with people beyond my immediate family,
My husband and I don't really communicate in the week. We are like shit.
Oh, I don't think we've spoken since 2019.
That's like, a dream.
Okay. Sorry. And my husband needs no communication at all to feel very content. I think he thinks that this is the perfect marriage.
We're all very lucky. That must be a children's thing, because I've spoken to my husband far too much.
I think it is a children thing. Yeah, because we speak to the children, definitely.
And then you run out, you're empty. But we don't get so many nights together in the week because of work. And someone said, where do you and your husband sit and watch TV? We plan it all the time. It never happens. Last night we went upset. He was like, should we watch something before we sleep? And I was like, great. And then an hour and a half later, we're still sitting at our laptops working. I was like, oh, that went well, didn't it? Another success. But yeah, I do think Sunday night trying to do something with them is quite nice, because it's one night a week when we're not being pulled by work.
I don't watch that much telly in the week. I agree, because like you, either I'm working or I'm out, maybe. I don't know. Let's see. I guess I'm going to be out. So Sunday night definitely would be telly, maybe a takeaway. Mm. Although my husband has banned and deleted the Domino's app because we started to feel like we had poisoning.
From Domino's?
Yeah. I was the Domino's hangover.
As a Domino's regular.
I am a regular Domino's girl.
I haven't had a Domino's, I think. I know I have one on my hand, and then I think not since uni, but fuck, I think about it a lot.
I love kind of junk food. Mm. I am, however, really realising, especially as I get older, that it doesn't make me feel great.
Oh, I love, don't get me wrong. Like I always say in another life, I'm going to come back and just really
indulge.
Let myself go. But I'm quite vain. But God, I mean, give me a soft crust. I wouldn't turn it down.
I'm with you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So what food gives you the most joy, other than Domino's?
In the moment, things like Krispy Kremes give me great joy. But then actually, I don't feel fantastic afterwards. So at the grand old age of 34, I am discovering that salads can be tasty. Oh, I love sushi. I dream of sashimi all the time. Any kind of pan-Asian food, anything Wagamama-y, dim-sum-y.
If I'm hungover, I kind of try and be healthy, because otherwise
my hangover is actually sushi. I think it's the salt.
Yeah, it's the salt. I'm with you. I'd have sushi every day of the week. It's the salt, and also I don't want the self-loathing that comes with being hungover and having eaten shit. To me, it's just not worth it. So I try and be a bit more strict. But Waggers is just one of life.
Waggers, ultimate. And also Mexican food. I love Mexican food.
Mexican and Waggers and sushi. I now want sushi for lunch. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about, we always talk on our podcast about people watching and reading.
Yes, definitely can.
Now, Charlotte and I, our tanks are empty. I'm trying to read Freakonomics on Rich's recommendation. They've updated it. Rich told me some fact about how if you call your daughter, no offense, Charlotte, she's going to be like this. And if you call her Pandora or Coco or whatever. Yeah.
They think it can be that determinative.
Yeah, well this is Rich. This is him, not me. And I'm two chapters in. I haven't got to that chapter yet.
I like unusual names. I'm not a fan of like really ridiculous names. I don't think if you give your child a ridiculous name, they're somehow going to be more special. In fact, I wonder if it's now going to have like the opposite effect.
Because there are so many more kooky names out there.
My father wanted to call me Anushka after Anushka Hempel, who was a model in the 60s.
Yeah.
And my mother was like, absolutely not, because she could be ugly and stupid.
I think Anushka it's not that out there.
Well, it's not that weird. My parents had some much weirder names than Pandora on their list, which
in 1980, I'd say it was quite weird. I think
Pandora's weird.
It's quite weird. When I was growing up, it's probably less unusual now, actually.
In 1980, you weren't born in 1980. I was in 1986 or wherever. Whenever you were born, I wouldn't say there were tons of Pandoras.
No, I never met any, but I hear of more now, actually.
Exactly. It's a great name.
Which I don't like.
It's a lovely name.
Not at all. How dare they? I wanted, my children are called Coco, Otto, and Mimi. And I wanted to call Mimi Echo. And
or Wolf if she was a boy.
I know.
Wolf's very sweet.
But I like animal names. Yeah, I do too. My dog's called Mouse. And I want to call my next dog Cat. But anyway, actually, I could go on. But anyway, I really, really wanted to call Mimi Echo. My husband was like, you.
Yeah, I think Echo. I know an Echo.
Thank you, Pandora.
I know of an Echo. Yeah. That sounds weird in case the person whose mother it is his. I know of her. I haven't met her without your knowledge.
You're the first person who hasn't knocked me out of town and said that. I've heard that that's a real name.
I think you should never share your baby names before you have them because then you get unsolicited opinions.
But yeah, also, which I did. I would agree with you.
I laugh at someone's name. No. Probably not even in private, actually. In my head, I might think that's a psychotic name.
So...
Back to reading and watching.
Can you inspire everybody with, I mean, you are the person that reads like every day over watching the TV.
I do read a lot. Like, I don't have much else to my name apart from reading. I have actually been watching quite a lot of telly recently because there's been some really good things on, particularly on Sky. Loved Mayor of Easttown.
I feel like the only, are you not watching it? Because I feel like the only person not watching it.
Yeah, it's really good.
Doesn't want to subscribe to Sky.
I don't think Sky is essential the bulk of the time, but it means that every so often you miss out on a real...
Like Mary Stan.
And also Your Honour with Bryan Cranston.
Yes. And what was the Hugh Grant one?
Although it had a really annoying ending.
Hang on, can we go back to
which also had a really
annoying ending.
Nicole Kidman. That ended, what, like January? And like, even last week I said to my husband, do you remember when we put all that time and effort into that show and then it just had the worst ending ever?
That's how I felt about Line of Duty. This is the problem with box sets, is sometimes, like... It's a Sin. I think, oh my God, I'm so glad I watched that. I am.
Me.
Life
too.
Is better. The world is better. What art will create. Even though it was really sad, I was filled up on its brilliance. Yeah. Sometimes I get to the end of a box set and I think, you have taken so much of me.
Yes. Because they reel you in, and then they just like drop you with a
terrible ending. That's why I love it. When you get something like The Loudest Voice. Oh my God. Russell Crowe, Sienna Miller, about the guy that started Fox News.
Oh, Roger Ailes.
Roger Ailes.
What's that on?
Oh my God.
Well, I love watching Sienna Miller. What's that on?
You will not be robbed. She is so bloody good in it. I can't tell you. Prime.
Okay.
Loudest Voice. Fuck, it's so
good.
Check it
out. I'm on a no telly time.
I think you should make an exception for this.
I will when telly time comes back.
Okay. How long does no telly time last for?
Just until it starts raining.
Oh, see. Well, I love that because it was 8 hours and I knew. But when you start something, you're like, whoa. I mean, even Schitt's Creek, which I know you love.
I love that, but I did have to bow out because there was so much to get through. I had to do the same with
my agent. We found
out,
my husband said, I don't think I'm worried to give another 20 hours of my life to this show.
But that's the kind of...
You can pick that up whenever.
Exactly. It's background noise. Exactly.
Oh, Friends the Reunion. I loved that. I sat there. None of my siblings could believe it. They were like, I didn't know you were such a massive fan. I said, neither did I. But it made me really nostalgic. So I remember watching the finale with all of my friends when I was in sixth form, but I was literally watching it like a child. It made me so happy.
I'm with you. And actually, I was not that obsessive Friends person. We watched it at school every week. It was like so exciting to watch it. And I went for the Rachel haircut. Obs. I found it quite canned.
I
even
do
back
find it
in
so
the day.
Funny how popular that haircut was because it's so hard to pull off.
Yeah, it involves a very round brush. Yeah. A very round brush.
Well, my husband is a massive Friends fan. He still watches it almost every night. See, when he's cooking. It's his therapy. But he didn't want to watch Friends Reunion. He found it quite depressing.
That's how I feel about Frasier. It's hard to explain that complicated relationship with Friends where, like, I know every episode and I know it so well. But I wouldn't say I love it. It's just permanent, you know, it's the fabric of our lives.
But also, I think just from the reunion, which got me was what they achieved was just so phenomenal. And it was so new and it was six unknowns and they were told, you know.
And it was really interesting. A, how amazing was it that they all got on? Because all those rumors of Sex in the City and, you know,
and they said not coming back.
But they obviously did. But what I loved as well is normally when you have those reunions, it's dominated by women because they're better talkers, my type of thing. And that was almost all David Schwimmer and Matt LeBlanc.
And they were so wonderful.
Yeah. I loved him.
What's happened to John?
All of them.
I don't know. 100%, does he?
I haven't read them, but I did see headlines suggesting that he wasn't that well.
But I did think, wow, like credit to them. You think what they were earning per episode and it was just, it was
like a million, wasn't it?
It was mad.
They are, but now, you know, like the Big Bang Theory, all those big shows now, they take more than that.
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, no, I can't even talk about how bad it is.
I haven't talked about how bad it is and how much. Although Kaley Cuoco, who's on Big Bang Theory, did another incredible show, which I believe was also on Sky.
That aeroplane one.
The Flight Attendant.
I didn't watch
that. That was really good.
Is it about plane crashes?
No. I agree.
Okay.
After, what's that, Live? Do you remember that film that came out in the 90s? Live. No. It's where a plane crashes and then they have to eat some of the people on it.
Yes.
I'm the youngest of four and I was never allowed into the telly room when these films were on, but I'd like burrow my way in, and I should not have burrowed in that day because it's hot. I hate flying. Yeah, it's ruined.
There's this film that came out in the 90s called Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah.
I have two phobias.
Obviously, I know about snakes on a plane.
Snakes and planes. I was like, someone... Oh my God, your dick jumps out of your pants. You jump out of the plane.
It is an incredible film.
It is the best film.
I've never seen it.
Con Air. That's ruling this podcast is.
No. Oh, we...
Other than rewatching Con Air, TV, can I quickly ask you, Your Honour? I've only done 1.5. Do I persevere?
Maybe don't bother.
Oh, okay.
Don't bother really.
So, can we go to books? Can you share 3 books? Joyful books, maybe, if that's
joyful.
Possible.
Well, or books that have brought you joy. I guess that's different to books.
We had this conversation with Vic Hope saying that Charlotte believes a book can't be joyful and like highly acclaimed.
Like, I don't think good books are happy.
It needs to rip your heart out. I actually don't know
if I've got any joyful. Oh, actually, Early Morning Riser by Catherine Heaney. That is a joyful book. So she wrote Standard Deviation, which came out about 5 years ago and was very acclaimed. She's written a bunch of others. She's written my favourite ever short story collection called Single, Carefree, Mellow. She's got a new one out called Early Morning Riser. And literally everyone I've spoken to has read it, has just gone, oh my God, and sort of clutch their heart. It's very tender, sweet, kooky. Like, it's a bit weird, all of her characters. She writes about love in the everyday in such a beautifully boosting way. And it kind of really changes the way I look at the world. So that is a joyful book. Aww. The others that I'd love, my favorite type of book, and I use this description way too much, are books that are heartbreaking but hopeful. And I've read a lot of heartbreaking but hopeful books this year. What It Feels Like for a Girl by Paris Lees is amazing. So that's a memoir by, so Paris Lees is a journalist and activist and now author, amazing author, and she grew up in Nottinghamshire. It's a memoir, but he is given a different name. So it's about a boy called Byron who's growing up in Nottingham with an abusive dad and an absent mother at the turn of the millennium, and Byron is queer, and he kind of seeks solace from his homophobic working class town of Hucknall in drag culture of the time and kind of ecstasy and Madonna. And he has a very, I mean, it's a shocking book. He is a rent boy as a teenager, and something awful happens, which is kind of the crux of the book, and that's where the hopeful part comes from. So this was about 20 years ago, and Paris is now a woman living in London, and it's just the most evocative. I am emailing any producer I know telling them that they should buy it because it would just look so incredible on screen, because it's just full of kind of bright lights and hope, but there's also kind of this devastating darkness. There's an underbelly to it.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That's
an amazing book.
Yeah. Wow. Sounds incredible. Good, yeah. You sold it to me. That's
good.
Can we talk about your ability to turn your phone off?
Yeah, that does bring joy.
It makes me almost a bit giddy to think of how liberating that must be. God, that would just be the freedom you must feel. How do you do it? Do you really do it?
And how long do you do it for?
I mean, it totally depends. If I'm at my parents' house, I'll often have it off for the whole weekend because I'm with my mum, my husband and my sisters, and they're the only people that have to be able to...
You're with your emergency contacts.
Yeah, with my emergency contacts. I've been working a lot in the evenings this year, but normally I would try and turn it off when my kids go to bed. Some people see like having your phone off a lot as like a moral, you know, thing of sort of like trying to set yourself apart from the modern world and, you know, these are where my priorities lie. It's honestly just that I just love the feeling of nothing kind of coming at me.
Well, nothing distracting
the solitude.
You from maybe
yeah,
what
nothing
you had
distracting.
Plan. I mean, the amount of times I go, right, tonight I'm going to watch this, or I'm going to read this, or I'm going to have it. And then I'm like, an hour and a half later, I'm like, what the fuck have I just done with my...
I just believe in the phone, your phone being a tool, which is why I don't have social media apps on my phone a lot. I'm trying to have like a more relaxed relationship with kind of productivity and efficiency. So it's not about like achieving all the time. It's more about being purposeful about what's encroaching on my time. So if I'm choosing to be on my phone and WhatsApp and look at Instagram and stuff, rather than it just being a running kind of soundtrack background to my day. And I actually think it makes me a better communicator not being on it all the time. Because you know those people, when you think, it's so weird that I haven't heard back from you a week when I've never seen you not on your phone.
But you also need to retrain your friends and your community or whoever it is that this is how you work. I also panic. My children are all at school that I'm going to miss. I got a mom the other day sent me a finger pointing up emoji to a WhatsApp group.
Ooh,
saying,
sassy.
Hi, could you reply to this message? Can bleep child make it to something? And I was like, fuck, that's because I had 87 WhatsApps in that one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not looking forward to, I hate WhatsApp groups. I'm not
whatever.
Looking forward to
school WhatsApp. I mean, WhatsApp needs banning. It's just the devil, I think it brings me.
I just hate, I actually leave WhatsApp groups as soon as the purpose is over.
Yeah,
or I mute,
really
or
good.
I mute them. So all my groups are on mute.
Aside from the fact that you are kind of more in the moment, all the positive things, like I have so many negative emotions connected to things I see on Instagram, only things that rile me up or irritating WhatsApp groups and conversations. And so it's not
just
only,
not what you need. It's
yeah. And it's, even if you're not kind of affected by social media and kind of in a social way, it is still influencing you in a way that you probably just don't need in your life.
Yeah. But do you turn it back on?
The thing is, I suppose, is erecting boundaries is always annoying for someone else. And, you know, I think as long as you're happy to be the recipient of it. So, like, I am happy for some friends to be rubbish at messaging me if that's what makes them feel good. Like, of course, it's annoying sometimes. I'd love them to get back to me about this date. But I think to myself, no, I'm not going to chase them because that's how they've decided to communicate. So I think if you can accept the way other people communicate,
yes,
then
so
they can keep sending me the pointy fingers. If you're amazing in something, you're going to be hopeless in something else.
Yeah.
Like that's always, it's the give and take, it's the gain and loss.
Yeah.
And I'm way better at accepting. So I'm really good at reading books. But as we've established, I'm very bad about making healthy salads, given that I just am acting like I've discovered them age 34. And I'm still flirting with the idea of trying an online exercise class, which again have been popular for like 10 years. So, you know, you're going to be great at some things and really rubbish at others.
That's fine. Yeah. We can't all be good at everything.
I'm
not a cook. I don't cook. I don't pretend to cook. My friends come for supper. They're delighted that I'm not cooking. I actually can make a salad, but as someone said to me, that's more arranging.
Yes.
And I do make quite a salad just assembling. Mm. I assemble, but I don't care. But I'm fine with that. Like, we can't all...
Can't do everything.
Can't sing. It's gutting, but I can't have a hard try. It's just not going to happen, is it? Let's talk about motherhood. Can we talk about the joyfulness that comes from having children? And I just wanted to touch on this today because we were reading, Charlotte and I, an interview that you did recently in which you talked about it not having to be that hard. You quoted something like, people always tell you it'll get better.
You said that everybody was saying to you just after you had your first child, it'll get better, it'll get better. And you were sitting there thinking, what's not that? It's not so bad for me.
And I said to Charlotte, yesterday, and I said, it is so lovely to read that because, and I will probably get abused for being smug, but freaking thrown at me, people, I can take it. I don't think it was that bad and I didn't find it that hard. And maybe I'm lucky. Maybe I was just neurotic and I had a routine and that helped me. Maybe, God knows. And I said to Charlotte, I was like, don't listen to everyone saying that it's not that bad. And it really annoys me that that's the narrative.
And I was saying, like, I only, as somebody without children, like, all you hear is how shit it is. Like, that's literally all you hear. And it's so great that everybody can be more open about that.
And I think
but it's also nice
it.
To hear
the
other side, isn't it?
The pendulum swung because it's obviously gone from mothers never being able to talk about what it was like. And
exactly.
So now you're going to get like a influx of stories that haven't been able to be told. There just needs to be a kind of range of stories. And
yes.
I don't really talk about motherhood that much because of what you just said. I am worried it sounds smug and I would never want someone else to feel less. But what I'm always keen to do when we talk about kind of how you find motherhood or feelings about motherhood is to separate how you feel about your children or being their mother from like the social identity of motherhood. Mm. And I feel really good about my role as their mother. That's an area of my life that I don't find anxiety making, which is such a relief for me because I find a lot of life anxiety
other
making.
Things. Yes. Yeah.
But I find the social identity of motherhood difficult. I find it really difficult to, especially as a freelancer, so those boundaries are really blurred because I work from home. I find it really hard to separate off like my mother self and my working self. Mm. I like to sort of represent myself fully where I go, and I find it really hard to feel like I'm fully myself when I'm at work, and I find it really hard to feel like I'm fully myself when I'm with the children and other mothers. And I also hated that people thought I was a different person and thought differently about the world when I had children, and I did in some ways, but I didn't mean suddenly I thought that like everyone who had children were more interesting, not always a given, or were a better use of my time, or that I suddenly couldn't remember what it's like to have children. You know, the most annoying thing I think someone does when someone who doesn't have children goes, I'm really tired, someone goes, well, try having children.
Oh,
so I just, that's what I found really difficult, is this assumption that I'd like gone to the other side, which I have, but that psychologically I couldn't empathize or be compassionate or be interested in. So that's what I think we need to
God,
be
you're so bloody eloquent. Yeah. I mean, no wonder you've had such success, Pandora. You speak such sense. God, you speak such sense. And I'm not saying when I say it that my life's perfect or whatever. You say you have anxiety, but not around motherhood. You know, what I'm not saying is that my life is perfect and I have no worries and I do. You know, my children don't break my heart and I have a child with learning difficulties and I have another child who's stressed about this and I have a, like, and no one's saying it's a walk in the park, but it's not the end of your life. Like, I think it's the best bit of your life and it's the most incredible thing, and the love is just, I'm not saying it's easy, but this thing that
I think it,
don't worry, it gets better, like,
don't worry, it gets better. I just felt a bit sad because I felt, I felt like it was approaching something that was really positive in my life always negatively. But also it was really ironic because I'm a bit torn on this kind of warts and all sharing of life on social media. I think it's brilliant if people want to do that. I think it's enormously helpful to other people. I don't think that you should be obliged to do it as a woman. And I remember being told a couple of times that I was making motherhood look easy because I wasn't sharing that warts and all side. And it wasn't something I thought I had to do because I just assume that everyone knows that we've all got stuff in our life that's not on social media. Mm. And that
you don't share you having a blazing row with your husband over something, or
You know, you don't share you on the loo doing a shit, but we still know that everyone goes to the loo. Like, I don't understand.
I have really bad constipation, so I'm just gonna show you what it's like.
But I think if you want to do that, fine, but great.
But it's the fact that there are people doing that makes people forget.
But again, it's the pendulum shift, isn't it, from women not being able to talk about anything to now, and I'm so glad that I can listen to a podcast and learn more about endometriosis, or I can find on Instagram tips to deal with my IBS. But now it feels like we swung to it being an obligation that all women have in order to show that life's not perfect. And I mean, it's such a hard line to balance. I really don't want anyone to ever feel less from my content, but I think that's probably why I post less as I get older, because I'd just rather take a step back. Believe in not sharing the best bits or the worst bits.
Yeah.
If you're somebody who's conscious of how other people are perceiving your social media and you care about that, then you equally don't want to, you're not trying to make anyone feel inferior. And the best way to do that is just to back off, isn't it?
We could talk about this all day, but that idea that you have to be this like present, amazing mother at this moment when you're being a mother, and then this moment when you're working, you have to be this full-on, like, ballsy woman. And why can't we just blend the two? Why are you a bad mother if you have to accept a call when you're with your children? Sometimes I'm like, I'm sitting in a meeting and I can see it's my name ringing or whatever. I'm like, I'm really sorry. And then you're sort of apologizing all the time. Why can't we just accept that everything's blended and more women are working from home and that it's only going to go in that direction? I think maybe we need to try and change that narrative and feel like that's okay.
I hope that post-pandemic, as people, because they think that there's going to be a kind of like slightly hybrid work, isn't there? That people will be in the office maybe 3 days a week, maybe 2 days working from home. I feel like that will be really great for women if more men do that, who have children, because then it means that's 2 days a week where they could do nursery, drop off, and pick up or
something. I'm so with you. I really hope it stays though.
And then I think if men have to have a slightly more blended personality at work, then that will help women who are then, as you say, able to say, oh, I have to pick up, it's my nanny. Or I was reading something the other day about there being miscarriage leave, because I don't think there is miscarriage leave, and there really should be.
I totally second that.
And it shouldn't be like taboo to say, I'm feeling really unwell today, so I'm, you know, don't talk to me too much. And for someone to go, what's the matter? And you shouldn't have to go, I've got a really sore ear. Just to be able to say, I've got my period, and I feel really awful when I have my period. You know, everyone knows that women have periods.
Well, motherhood, huge joy. And look, anyone who is can only agree. We talked on the last Kate Spade podcast about how you can be an intelligent woman and still love clothes and what joy they can bring you. You're nodding.
It's so funny that that's still okay. That's still a thing, but it totally is. You know, I said this before, but sometimes when people don't like my work, what I'll get on social media is like, oh, shut up and just go back to shoes, because 5 years ago I was a fashion editor. So it definitely is used as a way to keep women smaller, or to bring women down, or to insinuate that you can't be interested in other things. And the way I always think of it is, if you've got a heart surgeon who also loves golf, you don't think that he's any worse at being a heart surgeon because he loves golf. Or, you know, a financial advisor who adores classic cars. Again, you wouldn't go into his job and think, well, I can't take you seriously because you love classic cars.
Because you're wasting money on classic cars.
Because you're wasting money on classic cars, which, by the way, are much more expensive than buying clothes. So it is a really interesting, the kind of aesthetic and intellectual, the way it's pitted against each other. And I agree, a lot of people's brains, like people who are very academic, often aren't interested in the aesthetic. I think if you're creative, I don't think of myself as particularly academic. I just think I'm quite creative. So for me, it's kind of the same brain. I like putting puzzle pieces together, whether that's bits of a documentary or my person or my sitting room.
How do you describe your style? Eclectic, obviously.
You would say eclectic. I would say there's a lot of vintage in there. So I'd probably say I think of it as classic, comfortable, colourful. So I used to wear a lot more highfalutin stuff when I was younger, and definitely when I worked in fashion. Mm-hmm. I'm not particularly interested in what's on catwalks now, what designers think about XYZ. I still love style, but I definitely come back to the same pieces a lot more. So kind of day to day, my style is a lot more relaxed, like a lot of jumpsuits, you know, like a great jacket or blazer.
I feel really good about where style is now. I think it's in a good place. It's in a much more intelligent place.
I think fashion's much more inclusive now, isn't it? In what, not just, I don't just mean in sizes, I mean in kind of the things it's putting across. I mean, there's still absurd trends, you know, there's still like your lime green cycling shorts. I feel like you can kind of leave that to the 18-year-olds on.
Or a green leather matrix jacket.
I'm much better at resisting stuff now that I won't like in a few years.
Yeah.
So most, particularly in summer, I always come back to the same.
But also thing. you learn that it's just one big cycle, which is obviously pointing out the being obvious. But I mean, I've witnessed it with my own eyes for long enough now to see that really it's just the same. It's just,
and now watching people wearing all the stuff we did 20 years ago. So I walked down the street yesterday and there was someone in camouflage trousers with a studded leather belt and a tank top and a bucket hat. And you know, they were all the things I loved as a teenager.
I remember going out on Saturday night wearing pink camouflage.
It was those jungle trousers, the ones
I would wear. I think I would make Timberlands. Actually, No, I wouldn't wear pink camouflage trousers. Pink. That is too fashion forward for me, but there are people that I would like to wear them for me. I've got some friends who can pull that off who I would love to see.
I can see like an Attico coming out, that with like some killer heels.
That's true. Attico's version might be acceptable.
Again, that's probably even too fashiony for me now.
Well, I would wear a lot of that look if I looked like Giorgia Tordini, but I don't. So, you know,
I'd wear, Christ, she's pretty amazing.
Can I tell you one story? But we should say, just on fashion, one thing that used to spark joy for me is when you used to work with Man Repeller. And like that for me is kind of the heyday of fun fashion, personal fashion. And just so inspiring. Instagram wasn't then what it is now. And that was just so refreshing.
That was my favourite way to write about fashion, actually. I just did weird like fashion risks, for a better word, like wearing Crocs or only wearing one colour. So I remember I did all yellow, all red.
That yellow stands out. I remember that yellow. I still love
all that yellow. Doing all of those things, I really enjoyed. I did that after I left Sunday Times, where, you know, I had a column. I knew the new in tabs of every single website, and I was compiling kind of 40 different brands a week. And then I did Man Repeller, where it was very much personal style led. And then I haven't really written about fashion for the last 3 years. I still really enjoy style. I'm just not particularly interested in writing about fashion at the moment. So I feel like Man Repeller was such a wonderful place to kind of transition
out of like fashion.
Yeah. It was great for a time, but I think, yeah, long term, I'm much more interested, I think, in where I am now then, and just enjoying clothes and kind of my personal life. Yeah.
Before we finish, we've got to just talk about how you give joy back. Part of this piece of work we're doing with Kate Spade is all about, well, it's about joy. As we know, we've talked about it. Where have you been if you haven't picked that up for the last hour? But they really want to encourage people to spark joy and to gift joy forward. How do you gift joy forward? Is that giving your husband a lion? Is that sending something to your girlfriend? Is that a phone call? Is that turning your phone on at 8 and letting your mum ring you? How do you give it back? How do you give it?
I think all of those things are really good ways. I love small thoughts. So like yesterday, went to buy some fruit for my children who are fruit bats. And then I bought some very overpriced Brazola for my husband because I know he loves cured meats. One of my favourite things to do is...
I love buying little foodie things for my husband too.
I bought a gazpacho for my husband yesterday. He was so happy.
Mine does that. He comes back from the supermarket and he's bought all the things. He's like, you see, I really do love you. Food makes other people really happy.
I like doing it with books. I love sending little parcels. I'm always sending little parcels of things to friends. And now that bookshops are open, every time I go into an independent bookshop, I buy a book for someone I love. Sometimes it's for me, but I more try and buy it. I think, okay, well, I loved that book. And then I like to keep it on my own bookshelf. I'll lend books, but I would never give a book that I love to someone to keep. So like I've got a book in my bag. I'm seeing my producer on the show I've just worked on later. So I'm going to give him a book that I loved that I've just bought for him.
I think that's so thoughtful. It's lovely when people give good books.
Yeah. I sent all my godchildren a book about hope in lockdown.
Yeah,
and
that's
I copied a friend who did it, so I'm not going to take credit. I think just doing something that's not a birthday or because someone's sad. I was at school with a girl and she would literally send me white chocolate Kit Kats or something, like, because she knew we were both mad about white chocolate. And
heaven.
Little things like that. It's like the nicest little tart. And it can be a bar of chocolate that costs £1.
Yeah.
It's not the value, it's just the thought, isn't it?
Yeah. Dolly and I always did that, actually. And still do it now the high-low's finished. We kind of treated each other quite romantically. So for my birthday, she found a pair of Miu Miu earrings on Vestia, some like really old ones that she had in her head that she really wanted to buy them for me, and she like tracked them down. Or when we went for a walk the other day, I was like, I just need to buy something. And I came out with a bouquet of flowers for her. It's just like, I think when you work with someone really intensely, it's nice to keep the magic there via romance. Yeah. I'm a big believer. I think I'm more romantic with my friends than I am my husband. Yeah, I think that friendships really deserve romance.
Love that. What a good place to end. Thank you, Pandora. It's been so lovely chatting to you. You've got to get to your haircut.
Got to get to my haircut.
Enjoy. Lovely. Enjoy your me time. Enjoy your yellow dress. Enjoy the sunshine. thank you so much. That's it today. If you enjoyed that, then do please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends to listen too. And we will be back soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.